Bonjour, chers amis, mesdames et messieurs. Il m'est très agréable de vous accueillir ici à l'UNESCO. Je commence par me présenter. Je suis Aziz Abid. Je dirige ici à l'UNESCO un programme que certains d'entre vous connaissent peut-être qui s'appelle La mémoire du monde. C'est un programme patrimonial qui vise la conservation et la plus grande accessibilité du patrimoine documentaire mondial. Et nous ne sommes pas ici aujourd'hui pour parler de mémoire du monde, mais nous sommes ici pour parler d'un sujet qui lui est très très proche et qui a un potentiel immense de accessibilité du plus grand nombre au plus grand nombre également de livres dans le domaine public. Donc il s'agit de vous introduire aujourd'hui la conférence qui sera donnée dans quelques minutes au sujet de ce projet Gutenberg. C'est un projet qui est extrêmement sympathique, un projet de partage de fichiers. Nous connaissons tous les projets similaires pour la musique. Moi, j'ai des enfants qui passent la nuit à télécharger de la musique. Je vais leur dire maintenant qu'ils peuvent passer la nuit à télécharger des livres. Je ne sais pas si j'aurai autant de succès. Mais c'est un projet qui est très, très sympathique. Et je pense que un projet comme celui-ci mérite amplement qu'on s'y attarde, qu'on comprenne un peu ses promesses, ses difficultés, où il se trouve aujourd'hui dans la courbe de son développement et peut-être également comment on peut lui donner un coup de main, comment on peut renforcer le volet francophone et les autres volets de ce projet. Je n'ai pas eu le temps vraiment de regarder sur les 11 000 livres qu'on nous annonce qui ont été numérisés, quelle est la part de la langue française dans ces 11 000 livres numérisés, quelle est la part de la langue espagnole, quelle est la part de la langue italienne. Je pense que ce sont autant de questions que nous pourrons tout à l'heure discuter, examiner avec notre conférencier. Le conférencier que j'ai le plaisir de vous introduire dans quelques minutes, c'est Michael Hart. Michael Hart est le fondateur du projet Gutenberg. Il y a déjà plus de 30 ans qu'il a commencé à travailler sur ce projet. Si j'ai bien compris, il s'agit pour Michael Hart de présenter son projet pour la première fois ici en France. Et je pense que nous allons avoir pendant à peu près 2 heures le privilège d'écouter Michael Hart, de savoir comment ce projet a démarré, comment ce projet a cette ambition d'offrir au plus grand nombre donc l'accès à des livres électroniques en grande quantité. Je pense qu'il faut à un moment donné atteindre une masse critique pour qu'un projet comme celui-ci devienne une sorte de locomotive pouvant tirer à sa remorque d'autres projets semblables. Il y a des chiffres qui vous ont été proposés dans cette note de présentation. On nous dit qu'il y a à peu près 11 000 livres électroniques qui sont déjà disponibles. Il y a près de 500 nouveaux livres qui sont numérisés tous les mois. Et c'est un travail donc de partage de fichiers qui est en cours. Une précision, Michael Hart s'exprimera en anglais, mais vous pouvez utiliser des écouteurs. Nous avons des collègues qui vont assurer l'interprétation simultanée en langue française. Donc il y aura un retour aussi quand vous poserez vos questions vers l'anglais pour Michael Hart. Donc je pense que nous avons devant nous un sujet passionnant et nous allons prendre le temps qu'il faut pour exposer ce sujet devant vous et vous laisser le temps d'apporter vos contributions, d'ajouter vos questions, etc. Before leaving the floor for Michael Hart, I would just make a small comment. The title of this project is the Gutenberg Project. We all know who is Gutenberg. We all know that Gutenberg is there to inspire actions in the area of wider accessibility of the printed word, the printed book. But I would like, just for the sake of truth, historical truth, to say that the first printed book did not take place in Germany. The first printed book was not printed by Gutenberg. The first printed book was printed in a small city called Cheongju in Korea, in South Korea now. It's a very small book, about 100 pages, and it's similar to the first printed material by the printing press of Gutenberg. It's not a Bible, it's not a 42-line Bible, but it's a Buddhist priest teachings printed in a small book about 50 years before Gutenberg has started his printing workshop in Mayence. With this, I think we of course, this does not take anything away from the symbolism and the association that we have with the word Gutenberg, and I think that in all parts of the world, when you say Gutenberg, everybody thinks about the movable metal print. And I think that we are going now, entering into a new era where the book is not only printed on movable metal type, but also on an electronic format, and in many, many, many electronic formats, so that everybody could have access, even people who have not high-tech computer equipment, but even low-tech computer equipment. And this is something which I really like very much about this project. Now, you are not here to listen to me, you are here to listen to Michael Hart. Michael, the floor is yours.
Il y a 10 ans, nous avons 100 livres électroniques. Or, nous avons 11 320 livres électroniques. J'espère, 10 ans plus, dire nous à 1 million livres électroniques. Bienvenue. That's as much French as you're going to get out of me.
Good stuff.
I try. This is a lever, leverage. Like Archimedes said, give me a lever long enough and I'll move the world. Any of you who put one page of one book on the internet are going to move the world. Every time one of these books goes out, it's quite possible that in your lifetime, 1 billion people could have it. Oop. 1,000,000,000,000,000. That's the way we do it. Right now, if we have reached 1 to 1.5% of the world population with the books that we have, that means we've given away 1 trillion electronic books as of today. 10 years from now, I would love it to come back here and tell you we had 1 million books and we had given them to 15% of the world instead of only 1.5%. That would be 1 quadrillion books. Million, billion, trillion, quadrillion. Then I'm going to be dead and somebody else can do it. But when I go, my last project is going to be to translate all 1 million of those books into 100 different languages. I want to get all of this to as many people as possible. I think that what goes on in here between the ears is of ultimate importance, and that the way we change the world is to change what people can know. You go back through history, and all the great changes came about because of what people could know. There are several ways to look at this. I'm going to try a couple of them. I'm not very formal, even here. So you feel free to raise your hand and say, can you say something else, or can you talk about something else? If you go like this, I'll keep talking about it. If you go like this, I'll try something else. I'm very easy to get along with. Any way you want to guide me is fine. I have lots of approaches to this, whether we talk about it as leverage, whether we talk about it as education, whether we talk about it as opportunity, whether we talk about it as Moore's Law, that growth curve everybody talks about, where computers double in power every 18 months. Project Gutenberg went from 5,000 books to 10,000 books in 18 months and one day. It'd be really great if we made it from 10,000 to 20,000 sometime next year. We are all volunteers. Nobody gets paid for this. Every once in a while I get paid, but not for the last half a year. So it just depends on whether people donate us any money. I prefer to spend the money on equipment and scanners rather than on people. One thing we drastically need here for Project Gutenberg of Europe is copyright lawyers. I know hundreds of times more about United States copyright than I ever wanted to know. And it's hard, and it's harder when the copyright law changes all the time. We're very strict. We're famous, or you could say infamous, for making our people do copyright research. We get nastygrams, we call them, nasty telegrams from very famous people going, you did my book, you know, and I go, I'm not in your country. So I don't want to have a lot of that, especially if we're going to be wrong. Oh, we have done so much research that so far we haven't had to take anything back. I would like for our Project Gutenberg of Europe to get at least 10,000 with good, solid copyright research so we have no political hassles from anybody. I want to establish a reputation. People don't fight with me very much because I have a reputation of knowing what I'm talking about. 10 years ago, they liked to fight with me. They didn't know who I was. Now that several giant colleges and countries have tackled me and gone back with a bloody nose, they don't do that anymore. I want to do the same kind of good, solid production for Project Gutenberg of Europe. Okay, so we need people who know the copyright law. I'm an idealist. I'm a utilitarian. This is my whole career. This is all that I do. I love doing it. I'll talk about this until you all go home. As long as you talk back and I can keep getting a drink of water, we just keep going. The basic idea is very much like what Gutenberg and this unknown Korean came up with. It's the idea that instead of making everything by hand, we make it with machines. The Industrial Revolution could never have come about without this movable type idea or something very much like it. It didn't have to be the first thing. If someone else had invented interchangeable parts first, then somebody else would have invented movable type. But as it was, somebody invented movable type, and then somebody else said, we can make interchangeable parts out of other things. I don't know how many of you study history. If I point out something and it's too obvious, boring, you just say, shut up, go something else. It was very, very hard to replace a broken part before the Industrial Revolution because all the pieces were made by hand. And they were started off with one piece, and you made another piece that fit into that piece, another piece that fit into that piece, another piece that fit into that piece. And as long as it worked for you, that was fine. But you couldn't take this piece out of this one and put it into that one because, this one was a little bigger, and that one was a little smaller, and this one was a little sideways. Yeah, okay. But it increased the efficiency. enormously. Before the Industrial Revolution, basically nobody had anything. Everybody was a peasant, except for 1% or something like that. And then all of a sudden, we have this mass production of everything. And all of a sudden, we have a middle class. Never had a middle class before. All of a sudden, books, instead of costing as much as the average family farm, which is what they did before Gutenberg, now you could go to the marketplace in a little village out in the middle of nowhere, 100 miles from the nearest place on the map, and still somebody would come in with a wagon and a printing press on the wagon, and it would sell them books and print up flyers and everything for whatever they needed for May Day is coming and we're going to have a big celebration. Don't forget to be there. It's next Sunday. Before then, it all had to be written down by hand. Now, the idea, I mean, people try to make heroes out of the monks who would sit down and spend an entire year copying one book. But the fact is, it cost a fortune. The monk was one of the upper 1%. He wasn't supposed to be wealthy, but he was one of the most educated people. And you had to pay a year's salary to keep this guy writing the stuff for you to read. It was hard. I mean, I go looking when I'm traveling for pre-Gutenberg books, and they're very hard to find because there weren't very many. Within the 50 years surrounding the year 1500, there were more books printed than all the rest of history. I wouldn't doubt that within the 50 years surrounding this millennium, there will be more books published throughout all of that history, you know, another 500 years added on, and they're going to be electronic books. I have at home DVDs with 10,000 books on them. They cost $1. Two-thirds of a euro. I couldn't bring them with me because I didn't want to get arrested by the copyright police. I left them all at home. But we're going to make them here with Project Gutenberg of Europe. We have half a dozen people working on making lists of which books we can do in Europe. And we will have, next time I come here, hopefully you'll invite me back, I will have a box of these, and you can all have one. Because that's what I do when I'm in America. On the way here, I stopped in San Francisco, and I gave away 2 million electronic books. Then I went across the bridge to Berkeley, and I gave away 2 million more electronic books. And it didn't cost us hardly, it cost us so little, we didn't add it up. But call it $200 or $300. Nothing. Nothing. And we went to libraries. One reason why I'm not bossy. I don't want to tell them what to do because they're doing more than I can do. I do it differently. We have some people who scan the books and some people prefer to type them because it's their favorite book. You get a labor of love, is what we call it. And you get to read the book in a different way when you type it in. For some of us, it's a lot of fun. It's not just work. I'll have to admit, there are days when it's like work, and it's more fun. Oui?
Merci. Si j'ai bien compris votre intervention, ce que recherche votre objectif. I'm sorry, I'm speaking in French. You are here in a French country, and
that's why they're
you
there.
Have to. Okay.
I'm not getting anything.
You will get it.
No.
Okay. Donc, ça va? Non. Vous voyez comme c'est difficile, hein? Ah, c'est bon. Bon.
I hear him, not you.
No. You want English here?
I can't hear her, I hear him.
But there's a button to turn there.
No, you want to have the English translation?
Yeah.
So listen to her.
Est-ce que vous m'entendez en anglais?
There's a button to turn there.
Go ahead. Allez-y, okay. Allez-y. Il l'entend.
Non, il n'entend pas.
I hear you.
You.
I do not hear her.
Oh. Non, mais attends, écoute, il faut qu'il... Hey, c'est le problème des langues. Je suis très, très heureux de cet incident parce que ça permet de voir, il y a un très, très grand débat qui a eu lieu à Genève, au sommet sur la société de l'information, sur les problèmes du peu d'intérêt qu'on donne aux langues non anglaises. Et là, je crois qu'on a une démonstration sur le mépris, le peu d'importance, etc., qui est donné à toutes les langues non anglaises. Et vous avez dit que votre ambition dans l'avenir serait de traduire des livres de l'anglais vers les autres langues, et j'espère des autres langues vers l'anglais. Ça, c'est un premier point. Le deuxième point... That's all right? OK. Le deuxième point, c'est votre objectif, si j'ai bien compris, vise à mettre les livres, pour ainsi le savoir, à la disposition du plus grand nombre. Le diffuser à travers le monde en millions, en milliards, en milliers de milliards, etc., etc. C'est un objectif fantastique, mais qui se situe, selon votre démarche, en marge du marché et du libéralisme. Il faudrait que vous nous expliquiez qu'est-ce que vous gagnez, qu'est-ce que gagne votre projet à faire cet effort de diffusion à travers le monde avec un accès de gratuit ou quasi gratuit. Deuxième point. Troisième point, même si à travers votre intervention, on a compris...
Can we go for the first two first? I can't.
Wait, okay.
Yeah, I'll come back and we'll do. I've already lost. I think I have tunnel vision.
Oui, je suis. Sorry, I present myself. I work for the UNDP, but I am retired. I am economist. Je suis économiste et je m'intéresse beaucoup aux nouvelles technologies de l'information et de la communication. Voilà.
Merci beaucoup pour ces deux questions déjà. On va demander à Michael Hart d'essayer d'y répondre. Je lui rappelle les deux questions et en même temps, je souhaiterais que chacun d'entre nous se présente et d'essayer d'être bref pour qu'on puisse donner une chance au plus grand nombre d'intervenir.
The first question was about the linguistic
translations, yes, okay.
English to other languages.
Okay. I want to do all the books from each language to each language. As many as we can do. Until, you know, my dream is that on January 1st of some year, we do every book that went into the public domain from every language, and we have it translated to 100 different languages. I don't know how many total languages there are, but 100's a nice round number. We have 20 languages now that we have whole books in, and we have at least one book where we have taken certain things people wrote and translated into 78 different languages. This was just practice. Obviously, when we have a million books to do, we're going to need to be 10 years into the future, and we will be because it'll take that long. But then hopefully machine translation will be worthwhile to at least some degree. Personally, I think machine translation right now is even worse than OCR, optical character recognition, was 10 years ago. We translate, there's a famous joke that most of you have heard. You start with, the spirit is willing and the flesh is weak. This should be fun for these guys. And you translate that into Russian, and then you use the very same program to translate it back to English, and the spirit is willing but the flesh is weak comes out, the vodka is strong and the meat is rotten. Because spirit in English can be a liquor, a strong drink. And willing can be power. You have a certain motivation, certain power, or it can be strength. For an English speaker or a Russian speaker, it's probably very funny. I'm sure that some of the other languages they're doing, they're going, what the heck is he talking about? But that's the whole point. The whole point is that it doesn't come out very well. When I did my first scanner, there was a machine. I don't have anything here that's the right size, but it was as big as a big desk, and it cost lots and lots of money, and you had to sign up on a sheet to get to use it, and then you had to wait in line and to go halfway across the campus at the University of Illinois, which was at one of the huge universities. There probably weren't that many of these machines. And then I would scan the book, and then I would get a disc back. And then I would take the disc home and put it in my computer, and I would go, yuck! After just two times of doing this, I says, I can sit here and type this in. If you think of the time it spent me before, when I got up from my computer, I went to that machine, I did my work, I came back. I says, I could have typed all that in in the same amount of time. And we didn't have to have a $1 million machine. Yet, the reason that I'm here, and hopefully the reason that you're listening to me, is because I'm a visionary. I can't tell you how to be a visionary. I wish I could. I think there's something broken in my head. The very day that I got on the internet, I saw the internet the way it is now, except for one thing. I wasn't very interested in sending pictures and music. it's not that efficient. Yes, the second question.
Second question is about the dissemination and about... Mm.
What's the profit?
Profit, yeah.
People say that I'm altruistic, or they assume I'm altruistic. And yet, there's not a single person who got more out of Project Gutenberg than I did. And I'm not talking about money. I wanted electronic books. The big profit for me is that I got them. The big profit for everybody else is they got them too. Now, yes, that's my own private personal reason. And also, I'm an idealist in the sense that today you can buy a terabyte, a trillion characters worth of disk drives right over the counter. No warehouse deal, no discount, no nothing, right over the counter for $360 in the United States. Just before I left, we bought a sixth of a terabyte for $60, just to say we did it, just so I could say we did that when I came over here. That means you can buy a whole computer with a terabyte in it for less than $1,000. And you could have every word in the Library of Congress. Some people argue it might take 2 terabytes, but I know a lot more about the Library of Congress than a lot of people do. And a lot of what they have is pamphlets and pictures and flyers and stuff, and it's not words. And I'm perfectly happy to do all the graphics and all the music and everything, but my own personal measure, how I measure it, is words, okay? Scanning things as raw, what we call plain scans, is not my particular cup of tea. And people always ask me why. You can't search a plain scanned page. You can't quote it. You can't correct an error on it. It takes 100 times as much space in your computer. If you're downloading them and flipping the pages, you can't just go flip, 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 flip. Believe it or not, I do all my work on the internet at 14.4 kilobaud, the old slow modem. My computer doesn't do pictures. I don't have to do pictures. I do email. I got 1,000 emails from the time I went from Brussels to here, and I answered all the ones I had to just before I came here this morning. The efficiency, what we call a cost-benefit ratio in terms of money and in terms of time, is enormous. When I went to school, we had marble steps in the library. And these steps have grooves in them. I'm sure you've been to the Sorbonne and you have marble steps that they're worn down, right? From all the students running up and down the steps. I put some of those grooves in there. I went up and down and all over the library like crazy. And it drove me crazy because you're going to do your homework and you have 20 books you want to get and, you know, you can only get five of them. And five of them, nobody knows where they are. Five of them are checked out by some professor who's never going to bring them back. These books are open 24 hours a day. They're never in for rebinding. The pages are never torn out. You never have to worry about whether the library's open or bringing them back when they're due or paying overdue fines. And you can put them all on this one little disc like that and carry it with you in your laptop. I think this is what the cat's meow, the cat's whiskers. This is great stuff. We should have, I'm sure you have seen kids at grade schools and junior high schools with these book bags, and the kids are like Quasimodo with the book bags. Speaking of which, just before I left to come over here, I checked to see what our newest book was, and it's Eugénie Grandet par Honoré de Balzac. In French. En français. That's the very newest Project Gutenberg. And this was, didn't stack the deck, I swear. It just happened that way. This is something else I should tell you. People ask me all the time how I manage to do what I do. And the first thing I start out is telling them I'm lucky. Don't ever trust anybody who did this much work and they don't tell you they were lucky. It doesn't matter how smart they are or how hard they work. I mean, those are their requirements. But I would not be here today without being very, very lucky. I'm sure, I'm not getting a lot of questions, but I'm sure that people are going to ask me how I thought this up in the first place. Now, the profit, again, I thought was for everybody. I don't care if I make any money off of it, okay? The profit is we have a better world,
That's very clear. Thank you. We come back to this gentleman. Then there are a couple of colleagues who want to ask questions. Then I would like to invite Mike to take like 15 minutes to explain to us in a very clear manner how this project is being run today. We want to understand how things are being done under this project.
Bien. Merci beaucoup. Je voudrais très très rapidement lui dire que son approche est très très bonne pour les pays développés. Il n'y a pas de doute. Les gens qui ont accès à Internet et qui peuvent télécharger des livres ou des choses de ce genre. J'ai compris dans son intervention qu'il s'intéresse aussi, il a dit qu'il y avait d'autres supports que le support Internet, donc je suppose que c'est des DVD, des CD-ROM, dans lesquels on peut sauvegarder des livres, et pour lesquels les gens qui n'ont pas accès à Internet peuvent les lire avec moins de moyens. Mais même cela, à mon avis, parce que tout le monde ne lit pas, il doit comprendre qu'en Afrique, il y a des millions de personnes qui sont analphabètes. Et là, peut-être, est-ce qu'il réfléchit à des problèmes, à des supports sonores, c'est-à-dire des livres qu'on peut écouter. Ça va pour les analphabètes et ça va aussi pour les malvoyants. Merci beaucoup et je m'excuse d'avoir été long.
Every book that we have, at least in English so far, is available immediately. The very second we put it up for you to read it, it's up there for you to listen to. We're going to have to work on that for all the rest of the languages. And we also have, you know, PDAs, palms, like that. We hope to get millions of those and give them away with electronic books in them. During my 15-minute other presentation, I'll grab one of those and I'll show it to you. As you know, we call this question the digital divide. That's what we call it in the United States. And in the United States, I go to garage sales. I understand these aren't great big items over here, but when people move to another city in the United States, which they do a lot, especially at a big university, they sell a lot of their stuff before they go. And all, I have 150 computers, and not one of them was ever bought new off the shelf. I have bicycles. Almost everything I own comes from these things. And I, what I will tell you is that last year, I have my little palm that I'll show you. And last year, I saw three of these at garage sales for $1 a piece, and a couple more for $2 and $3. And I see whole desktop computers for $5, $10, $15, $20. And if you come back afterwards and it didn't sell, they'll give it to you for free just to get rid of it. Now, collecting all that stuff and organizing it enough and putting stuff in other languages, that's half the work. But I'm going to keep working on this. And I certainly have as a goal before my allotted time is up to go to Africa and go to other places and unload whole planes full of stuff in their languages and where you could learn to speak and learn to read from whatever's in the little boxes. All right. It's still all my stuff is a dream until after it happens.
Pierre Nicolas, is that all right? Yeah. Pierre Nicolas, I'm a business consultant. I would like to focus on the economic or the financial dimension of your project. My first question is, how do you personally earn your money? That's the first question. Second question is, what are the financial sources of your project?
What are the?
The financial sources, or what is the funding of your project? And my third question is, how do you imagine that the movement is going to spread wider? Because, of course, you want a lot of people and institutions to join into your project. So what is the reason or the motivation that they will have in order to join it? And last, you know that there are significant institutions which are Corbis or Getty who are specialized in dealing with images. And
with which?
Corbis.
Images.
From images, yes. Corbis from Bill Gates. Bill Gates owns it, etc. And of course, their idea is to sell either the rights or the derived products of it. So how do you integrate this kind of consideration in our project?
You want me to go backwards or forwards? You want me to start at the beginning or the end? I mean, I can start with Bill Gates. I went to Microsoft the day they unveiled one of their browsers. And as part of their demonstration, I asked them to type in Bill Gates and Michael Hart. I got half as many hits as Bill Gates. Not bad for somebody who works out of his basement at 14.4. I figure I'm doing okay, and I'll keep trying to do better. The hard part is I get old, and I'm gonna, you know, I've been doing this for 33 years. I won't live another 33 years. I'm a lot older than I look, by the way. I'm pushing 60. So now back to the first one. What do I do for money? When I was young, I repaired electronics. I built hi-fis, stereos, radios, TVs, and I got quite famous at this. I never read a book on electronics in my life. I have a green thumb. Do you guys have that kind of term? I can put my hand, I can just feel what's wrong with it and I can fix it. And when I stopped doing that, I was making $200 an hour. And this was, you know, 10, 20 years ago, when $200 was worth a lot more than it is now. I never spend the money I have. I just save it. So I never have to worry about what's happening with money. I don't deal with money. I don't think about money. I don't do paperwork. I will go years with making no money. And then I'll make a bunch of money, and I'll just save it, and I'll go a bunch of more years with no. And I don't buy anything that's expensive. My tastes are very simple. Sebastian can tell you, trying to feed me, you have to feed me meat and potatoes and bread and butter and eggs. That's it. Okay, that's 1 and 4. Now 2 and 3. Did you write down 2 and 3? No.
No.
What are the financial sources of your oil?
Project Gutenberg still reflects my personality a little bit, sadly to say. C'est dommage. They don't deal with money either. When somebody gives us money, we buy a scanner. We have a very fancy scanner in Las Vegas.